This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's happened to Caroline Kennedy and some of her cousins, Jesse Jackson and his wife, representatives and sisters Loretta and Linda Sanchez. Even the Congressional Black Caucus has divided opinions. In a presidential election like no other, longtime political allies break over Senator McCain and Governor Huckabee, but even more between Senators Clinton and Obama. The divides include gender and race and age, and often the argument rages across the kitchen table. Mothers are pitted against daughters, husbands against wives, friends against the best of friends. Later in the hour, we'll listen to former Governor Mitt Romney on why he decided to drop out of the Republican presidential contest today. And we'll talk with political junkie Ken Rudin. But first, politics at the dinner table. Is your family split? Are you arguing with your cousin, your sibling, your best friend, your spouse? Tell us your story. Our number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin with Andrea Brustein and Michael Firestone. They are attorneys, and they're married to each other. They join us from our bureau in New York City. Nice to have you on the program today.
Nice to be here.
Thanks.
And Andrea, when did you realize that you were at odds over your presidential preferences?
I guess over the last month or two, the more we talked about it, the more Michael went toward Obama, although I think initially he might have been leaning toward Hillary, mm-hmm. and the more I realized that I was not leaning toward Obama. So,
But was there a moment when this became evident?
Well, I guess it became more of an issue when I realized that my husband had been donating money to the Obama campaign, and I didn't know about it. So,
and how did you find out?
We were having lunch with friends, and one of our friends was talking about having gone to an Obama fundraiser, and Michael mentioned that after he heard Barack Obama speak after the Iowa caucuses, that he donated money to the campaign, and this was a few days later, and I just looked at him and I said, "We did," and then I said, "All right, well, you know, how much did we give?" And then, you know, we're going to now give to the Clinton campaign as well.
And Michael,
yes,
you gave in both your names?
I think it was just in my name. I knew at that point that she was not going to support Senator Obama, so I just put myself down.
And has this thus far been a friendly banter between you two?
Completely friendly.
As you discuss the issues, what is it? Where does this come up, other than at lunch with your friends?
Well, you know, if we'll watch a debate, it always comes up. Certainly, if we're watching the primary results, like this past Tuesday night, it comes up. We discuss it. You know, occasionally with our friends, it'll come up with family.
And at this point, do you think you're going to be able to change your wife's mind?
I really can't answer that publicly.
Andrea?
No.
And Andrea, do you think you're going to be able to sway your husband?
No, for sure not.
So this is going to go, well, there was the New York primary.
Right. We've already voted, but
we've canceled each other's votes in that primary.
And the delegate, I guess, gets divided by half. This is a biblical cutting. Anyway, as you look at this, I wonder at this point, is because the primary is over, is this still a live issue?
Well, I mean, the primary in New York is over, but I think we're interested down the line what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So we're certainly interested in who we'll vote for in November, and I think as of now, we have different choices, even though we're in the same party.
Really?
Yeah.
And
I would prefer that I get to vote for Obama in November, and I think Andrea would prefer that Hillary Clinton's on the ticket instead.
Yet if either of your preferences in the event, well, one of them is not going to make it,
sure.
At least to the top of the ticket, would you support the other one?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
And at that point, everything comes back together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course, yeah.
Well, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you
for having us.
We appreciate that. We're talking with Michael Firestone and Andrea Brustein from our bureau in New York. They are attorneys married to each other and differ over their presidential preferences, as they discovered, and one of them made a political donation. Joining us here in Studio 3A in Washington is Emily Bazelon, and she's the senior editor at Slate.com. She's with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And I guess this is not unusual this time around.
No, I think this election is a sort of generational moment where we're going to see a lot of this, particularly on the Democratic side. And as you alluded to in the beginning of the show, there's some very powerful political couples who are divided. Arnold Schwarzenegger had a great line about this. Someone asked him how he feels about Maria Shriver supporting Barack Obama when Governor Schwarzenegger is a McCain endorser. And he said, well, you know, I pledged to be married to her in sickness and in health, and this is her sickness.
And this is, Jesse Jackson and his wife, though some people are saying in some of these contexts, maybe people are just making sure they have a foot in both camps.
That might be true. But I think for couples like the one we just heard of, these are really kind of unusual moments because they're in the same party. They're used to agreeing with each other on substantive issues, and they probably agree with each other this time as well, because these candidates are not really divided on areas of policy in any great way. This is really a choice between two different people, who they stand for, their characters, a woman versus a black man. And those are differences that matter, but they're differences one would be more likely to have within a family.
There are ideological differences on the Republican side. You're finding the same kind of passions in that argument?
That's interesting. Yes, it's true. John McCain and Mike Huckabee, and until this morning, Mitt Romney, do have substantive policy disagreements. But for that reason, I would think it would be less usual to have discord within a family, although you might still. I mean, the other thing that's interesting on the Republican side, we're not seeing a big gender gap in the voting. About the same number of women as men are supporting John McCain and Huckabee. But that's not true on the Democratic side. There is really a strong tilt on the part of women toward Hillary Clinton, and a lesser tilt, but one that does exist on the part of black people and white men toward Barack Obama.
Also an age divide, younger people going for Barack Obama, older people going for Hillary Clinton.
Yes, and a class divide, people who make over versus under $50,000 a year, and whether or not you're college educated, also that's a big divide.
There is a number of states where there's been black-brown tensions in the past. You think of California and Texas in particular, and again, there's a divide.
Right. We're seeing overwhelming support for Barack Obama in the black community. In some of the states that voted on Tuesday, it was as high as 85 or 90%, but the Latino vote was going strongly for Hillary Clinton.
And is this likely to, well, since the campaign on the Democratic side is not likely to end anytime soon, at least according to the experts, we could be surprised, like we were today by Mitt Romney, but nevertheless, this argument's not going to go away.
Right, and that's another unusual dimension of this issue, that people aren't just having a momentary disagreement, which then gets patched over because there's a clear winner and everyone sort of joins hands and hopefully, for the sake of either party, supports the nominee. Instead, we're having a kind of extended period of uncertainty with a lot of time for arguing and debate. And, you know, the happy side of that is that people can really think about these differences and why they're on opposite sides. And the less happy side is that perhaps the reasons are, you know, going to sort of fracture friendships and other relationships because they can be quite hard to talk about, these racial and gender differences.
Let's get some listeners in on this conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Our guest is Emily Dazilon. And she's with Slate.com. And let's talk with Mary. Mary with us from Virginia Beach.
Hi, how you doing, Neil?
Very well, thank you.
We have found in our family two generations of military, both my father and my husband's father, and both myself and my husband are both in the military. And for decades, I have been a registered Republican. But as this debate has gone on, I have found I am the lone closet Democrat, and we can no longer have discussions about any politics because it starts on the issue and then it goes to the political member. And once they start, once I start saying, you know, that the issues I'm leaning more toward is a Democratic supported position, all breaks loose at our home and even on the phone. So it's become a very contentious part of our family life, not only my husband and myself, but extended family to my mother, his father, and our siblings, because they're all still, you know, red Republicans. And I don't know where my husband's gone quite yet because he's still kind of teetering, but I have found in myself that I no longer can you know, support the Republicans and what they believe in, and I've got to go and change my party affiliation now. And this is the first time I have ever felt that I have been on the total wrong side of the road.
And Virginia Beach, a Navy town. Of course, John McCain, the son and grandson of admirals, went to the Naval Academy, a naval aviator, prisoner of war, war hero, and this seems likely to intensify.
Yes, and that's the biggest thing, is my family looks at me and says, you're in the military. How can you not support McCain? And I can't.
Well, do you talk about it anymore?
No, it has now come to the point where it's just not mentioned.
Just not mentioned. It's no. It's the elephant in the room.
Exactly.
Or in your case, the donkey in the room.
It's come to the point where we just, they look at me and say, well, all our votes will cancel yours. So we're happy.
All right. Mary, good luck. It's going to be an interesting few months.
Yes, it is. Thanks so much.
So long. I wonder, Emily, do you have any advice for people who are having these kinds of arguments over how they might address this problem?
I actually think the strategy of not talking about it too much is a pretty good strategy. I mean, it sounds like from that caller that she's not going to convince the people in her family, and she feels strongly the way she feels, and she's sort of isolated or certainly in the minority within her family. And so I'm not sure what good would come of a lot of thrashing it out, because obviously she is a member of her family and she wants to be in good standing and keep those relationships going. And sometimes it's okay to decide that you're not going to confront every disagreement.
Unless you're sitting at the kids' table, the dinner table is likely to be abuzz with politics this season. Are you arguing with your spouse or your sibling or your friends and your family? Tell us your stories, 800-989-8255. You can also email us, talk@npr.org. If you haven't heard the news, former Governor Mitt Romney of Massachusetts has dropped out of the presidential race. We'll hear what he had to say to a convention of conservatives meeting here in Washington earlier today and talk with political junkie Ken Rudin a little bit later in this hour. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Religion and politics, the two things you're supposed to avoid at the dinner table. But come on, it's almost impossible to do, especially this political season. We got this email from Maureen in Phoenix, Arizona. While my husband is a registered Republican and I'm a registered Democrat, my bigger issue is with my fourth grade son. For the 2004 election, he insisted that his teacher change the ballot so he could write in his top candidate, Ralph Nader. He then went over to the dark side in third grade after writing a school assignment on George Bush. We recently took the candidate dating game quizzes, and he answered each question thoughtfully. He assumed that he'd match up with his fellow Arizona Republican, John McCain, but instead his top matches were Kucinich and Obama. After another quiz, his top matches were Obama, Edwards, Clinton, etc. However, he still insists that he's a Republican. Grr! Drives me crazy. We're talking with Emily Bazelon. She's a senior editor at the online magazine Slate. We want to hear your story. Did you sleep on the couch after a marital discussion about true conservatives make your mother-in-law cranky with your support for Clinton or Obama? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, the email address talk@npr.org. You can also read what other listeners have to say at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. Let's get another caller on the line. Mark is with us from Salt Lake City in Utah.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
I have the problem of both religion and politics with this, because 3 years ago when I married my wife, I knew she was a Republican, and I've had to work hard to convince her and her whole family of the error of their ways. And fortunately for me, but unfortunately for the rest of the nation, the Bush administration has given me lots of evidence to support my position. But now Romney has created an extra problem, because we're both Mormons. She votes for Romney, but I can't stand Romney. I'm voting for Obama. And now we have, we've combined the problem of discussing religion and politics both in the same argument now, and now I've got a double problem of convincing her of the error of her way.
Well, you've had two things that are working in your favor. The Utah primary has already been held.
Yeah, and for once, my vote counted this year.
And on the other side, Governor Romney dropped out today.
Yeah, so now we don't have to debate that any longer.
Get back to fundamental issues.
Excuse me?
You can get back to fundamental issues.
Well, we still have to debate the issue of who we're going to vote for in the fall, and I'm still working on her. I've got her partway there. I might, you know, get her all the way to see, you know, the correct version of things.
Well, after the withdrawal of Governor Romney, maybe you could call it a ceasefire for a while anyway.
Yeah, it'll be quiet for a little bit.
Okay, thanks very much for the call, Mark.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's talk now with Christiana. And Christina, excuse me, is with us from Columbia in South Carolina.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an extremely...
Whoop, you got an extremely bad cell. I apologize. We've lost the call. That's another problem we can argue about at another day. Let's go instead to Rich, and Rich is with us from Columbia in Missouri.
Hi.
Hi.
You know, this isn't anything new within my family. I remember when I was six, my dad supported Goldwater, and my mom was for LBJ.
Really?
Yep.
That's a pretty wide gap.
Well, my dad was a lifelong Republican. I don't think he ever voted for anyone, for at least president, that wasn't Republican. And my brother went on to be a staunch anti-Vietnam War demonstrator and even ran for Congress as a Democrat. Got whooped. Siblings are about evenly split. And we just generally... don't get into that conversation, or we agree to disagree.
I was going to say, it must have made for some pretty interesting Thanksgiving dinners.
Once or twice, but not too much. Like I said, we generally just, knew that the other was an idiot in that way and let it go. But interestingly enough, when my daughter just voted in her first presidential primary or election of any type, and I asked her who she was going to vote for, and she knew that I had actually had, for the first time in my life, made a donation to a candidate this term. And she just basically said, I don't think I want to tell you.
Wisdom finally arrives in your family. Rich, thanks very much for the call.
Certainly.
And Emily, the kids raise another whole aspect to this.
It's true. I was reporting at the Iowa caucuses when they were happening. And, at the caucuses, you don't just see people make their choice. You see them kind of talk with each other. And there was a young woman there who was a strong Hillary Clinton supporter. She was one of the precinct captains. And she was living for the year with the family. So she wasn't speaking to her biological father, but it was a father who was in a sort of foster father role. And he said, I'm thinking of maybe going over to the Obama group. And she said, are you kidding? If you do that, I'm going to lock the door on you tonight when you come in. And I looked over about 5 minutes later, and he had stuck with the Clinton group. So, those kids, those loyalties can mean a lot.
Here's an email from Judith in Norfolk, Virginia. I'm a 19-year-old Hillary supporter from Virginia and have definitely alienated myself somewhat from my friends. Of course, Obama has the huge youth swell, and being a young Hillary supporter is almost committing fratricide. I wish my younger friends would get a grip, but I know how many young people are voting in Tuesday's Virginia, Maryland, D.C. primary. So the youth do hold the power in this cycle. Hopefully it is for Hillary. Well, the exit polls are not on her side, at least not on that one.
No, that's a hard position to be in, to be sort of at odds with the people who are your own age cohort, particularly, if you sort of see Obama as the hipster candidate and here you are backing Hillary Clinton and that feels less cool. That can be sort of a hard position to be in.
Let's talk with Bob. Bob with us from Edwardsville, Illinois.
Yeah, my wife and I have a difference. We're both lifelong Democrats, over 30 years. But I'm more conservative and probably gotten more conservative as the years have gone by. And she wants me to drop out of the Democratic Party and become a Republican.
Oh, she says you're not a true Democrat, so you should leave the party?
Yeah, I pulled a ballot on Tuesday, a Democratic ballot, and she said that wasn't right, even though probably 98% of the votes I cast are for Democratic candidates. And I point out to her that when we both became Democrats, the party was much more conservative. You can take issues now like gun control, abortion, gay marriage. All of those were stances that the Democratic Party 30 years ago have changed dramatically in 30 years.
Well, as we heard earlier from Emily Bazelon, there's not a huge ideological difference between the two major Democratic presidential nominees candidates this time around. Who did you vote for, and what was the argument over?
I voted for Hillary, although, you know, we were in the car, and Ralph Nader was being interviewed, and he's got an exploratory website now to see if people want him to run. And that, my wife and a lot of our friends who are professionals and academics just hate Ralph Nader. And I remember, you know, 15, 20 years ago when they loved him. And I'm thinking he hasn't changed much. It's all political. You know, it's what he did in the election. You know, they perceived that he gave George Bush the presidency.
Thanks very much for the call, Bob.
All right.
Bye-bye. And as we heard from the earlier caller over the Goldwater-LBJ divide, and these memories hang on. People don't forget these kinds of divisions.
Oh, I think that's definitely true. And, you know, some of the really strong ideological divisions, they divide people for very deep reasons and reasons that aren't going to go away. And I think it'll be an interesting question about the Obama-Clinton contest that even though we're not seeing the same kind of ideological divide, people have very passionate feelings. And will they sort of recover for them, rally together? You know, and that matters for the country. But it also does matter in these personal relationships as well.
Let's talk with Mary. Mary with us from Hutchinson in Kansas.
Hi.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I've been married for 14 years, and when I got married, my husband was a Republican, and I'm a staunch Democrat, and he's become a Democrat, first subtly voting Democrat, and now openly, but he's...
So he was a closet Democrat for a while?
I'm sorry?
He was a closet Democrat for a while?
Yes. He would quietly vote and not talk about it much, but now he went to the caucus with me Tuesday, so the Super Tuesday caucus, and he went for Obama, and I went for Clinton, and so he stands on his position, I stand on mine, but we agree to disagree.
Well, you're still divided, but at least you're in the same party.
But I've got him in the same party, and we both agreed that whichever one finally wins the nomination, we'll back completely.
So has this calmed things down in the household?
It's real. We'd have good discussions. Even when he was Republican, we had some good discussions and never really argue about it. We just agree to have different opinions.
Mary, thanks very much, and 14 more.
Hi, thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's an email from Davida in Cincinnati. We are a Shriver-Schwarzenegger household, not because of our fabulous looks. We live in Cincinnati, and I was going to propose to my husband having a yard sign for Obama for the primary. The concession on my part is to let him have a McCain yard sign in October and November if Hillary wins the nomination. Since I don't think Hillary can win Ohio in a general election, I thought I would be in the winning spot in this deal, but after hearing about Hillary's loan to her campaign, my husband will not accept the offer.
Oh, no. A deal scuttled by the news.
Let's talk with Krista. Krista with us from Denver in Colorado.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to comment that this election is actually bringing my family together for the first time ever in the history of our voting records. I am a Democrat, always have been, very much a Obama supporter, and talked to my father for the first time about this just the other day, right after the caucuses here in Denver. And he was actually a Giuliani fan until Giuliani dropped out. And now, all of a sudden, my whole family is supporting Obama. As long as I have known my father, he has been the staunch Republican. And then he actually told me that he talked to my grandparents as well, who, again, always staunch Republicans. Both my grandfather was in the war, and they're all Obama right now. So I just am absolutely amazed at the turn of events and the fact that this election has brought us all together for the first time in history.
Are you all getting together later today to sing Kumbaya?
We probably should. Unfortunately, we're all spread out around the country, so we're going to have to do that at some kind of a family reunion this year.
Well, perhaps that's why they invented webcams.
Well, let's hope that Obama actually wins this thing and we'll continue to vlog.
Thanks very much for the call, Krista.
All Thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's an email from Robin in St. Louis. While I lean center-left, my husband always votes Republican. This is the first election since we have been together where we have harmonious election discussions nearly 12 years. I happily voted for McCain on Super Tuesday. So some of the candidates, the Obama candidacy for that caller from Colorado and the McCain candidacy for this emailer from St. Louis are bringing people together. So maybe it's as much a unifying factor as a dividing one. What do you think, Emily?
Well, McCain and Obama would both be really happy to hear that because, of course, part of their appeal is supposed to be that they're reaching across these partisan divides and luring more independents and more people who are not in their party. So that's good news for the candidates.
Our guest is Emily Bazelon. She's the senior editor at Slate.com. And if you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation coming to you from NPR News. Enid's with us. Enid's calling from Santa Cruz in California.
Hello.
Hi, Enid. You're on the air.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I have three daughters, twins who are 12 and a 15-year-old, and a husband who has always been incredibly supportive of women in general and of Hillary Clinton. My three daughters are rabid Hillary supporters, as am I, go to school every day with the buttons on their sweatshirts. But my husband has recently decided he's supporting Obama, and it's caused some conflict and some tears at the dinner table.
Tears?
Some tears. We had some tears from one of my 12-year-olds who herself wants to run for president, and she just doesn't understand why he's changed his mind and why he's not supporting the first woman.
And nothing he could say would make her feel any better?
Well, she was consoled, but her retort is that, you know, Obama may be an eloquent and compelling speech maker, but that's not what he's going to have to do every day in the White House.
And she wants to run for president herself?
She does. She's planning already. She's got all the books. She knows that, you know, you get your dry cleaning for free, but you have to do your own laundry.
Well, tell her to start fundraising now.
I will.
Okay. Thank you very much, Enid. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And let's go now to Derek. Derek with us from Alameda in California.
How you doing?
Very well, thanks.
It's not an issue between me and my girlfriend that we're in a different political party. We're both Democrats. Our tension comes from, she's a Clinton supporter, I'm an Obama supporter. It's about the electability of those two. I kind of feel that Clinton is not electable simply because she's a Clinton. And she's Clintons, I feel, are universally hated across the board in Republican camps and can't work together with other parts of Congress, et cetera, whereas she sees it as perhaps I have a bit of not hidden misogyny, but maybe an anti-feminist slant in not voting for potentially the first woman president.
And
it kind of causes a little bit of tension, and it amplifies as the race goes on.
I was just going to ask, this doesn't sound as if it's improving with age.
No, as the weeks go on and the race draws closer and tighter, it's, you know, well, why not give the first woman an opportunity? Why not give the first black man an opportunity? Well, it must be because I have some hidden anti-feminist feelings is her take on it, which is, you know, not true.
Good luck with it, Derek.
It's a tough one.
All right. Bye-bye. Here's finally a couple of emails from Raina in Wisconsin. I'm a dyed-in-the-wood liberal. My husband in the last 7 years is a Rush Limbaugh addict. I found that the only thing that gets us through is a sense of humor. Getting personal is the kiss of death. He teaches me tolerance and makes me a better citizen. I would not be nearly as politically informed and likely to contribute to my various social causes if I was not married to the enemy. So, Emily, I guess there is an upside to these kinds of conversations.
I know. I love those stories because I think for a lot of people, the idea of being married to someone who is really your ideological opposite is like more unimaginable than being married to someone who doesn't share your religious views. But then there are people who really make these relationships work.
And here's another email. This is from Nina in Sausalito, California. I am the only liberal in a family of rabid Republicans. I'm also adopted. I found my birth mother about 5 years ago, and we share political views almost exactly. So I've concluded that such things are hereditary.
Wow.
And so I have to ask you, in your family, are you arguing?
Yeah, we have been discussing, certainly. My husband and I have not been in complete agreement about what to do. We're both Democrats, but beyond that, we've been sort of tussling it out. And what's actually been really interesting to me is watching my kids. My kids a few months ago heard the Don't Tell Mama I'm for Obama slogan, and they had no idea what it meant, I don't think, but they loved saying it. They made a sign for me. It was very sweet. But lately, as my husband and I were discussing the election returns from Super Tuesday, we were talking about why just mentioning that Obama's support was so strong in the black community and that more women had voted for Hillary. And my 8-year-old son asked us why that was true. And that's a really hard question to answer in a way that an 8-year-old is going to both understand and appreciate and not. I didn't want to say anything that would really emphasize differences. 8-year-olds aren't, they know that they're not colorblind, but you want to make him feel that you can reach across these divisions. So I felt like I had to do some tricky thinking to figure out what to say.
That's your next book, The ABCs of Politics of Identity.
That's a great idea.
Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having
Emily
me.
Emily Bazelon is a senior editor at Slate.com and joined us here in Studio 3A. Coming up, former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney suspends his campaign, making John McCain very much the front runner for the Republican presidential nomination. We'll talk with political editor Ken Rudin about what it all means next. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.